Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time to take you behind the scenes in Smash Mouth.
Cuts across, he scores!
This is the Preds Official Podcast with Thomas Willis and Brooks Bratton.
Powerful move from back of the net.
On Smashville's best sports talk,
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Predators Official Podcast. I'm not sure that Thomas Willis can hear, but we're going to try it anyway. ESPN 102.5 The Game. So glad you've joined us for episode 90. We've done 90. Well, we're not done with this yet, but in about an hour, we will have done 90 of these. And as if you didn't already have hearing loss, here we are.
I think I just was like a real cartoon character. The volume waves themselves lifted their head, my headphones off of my head.
Max is just making sure we're awake. He's
that
back,
was
by
loud.
The way.
Yeah, well, he is. young Maximilian is returned to the producer's chair. You are Brooks Bratton. I'm Thomas Willis. I don't know if we said that.
Well, you probably couldn't hear.
Couldn't hear. This is the Preds Official. No, I'm just kidding. Episode 90. Okay. Anyway.
Welcome to the program. We're happy to have you.
Happy to be here.
Hey, lots to get to this week as we, again, just continue to be pleasantly surprised at how much we really have had to talk about this entire time. But today, as we record this on June the 12th, we are exactly 3 months from the day. I was going to say, at this time 3 months ago, I was in a hotel in Toronto trying to figure out how we were getting home.
The day that we'll live in infamy, part two.
It's kind of crazy to think that we're 3 months in, but we are 3 months into this pause, and plenty of content on today's show. As we said, the NHL has entered phase two, and they have released a date for phase three and the start of training camp. So we will touch much more on that in just a moment. Really cool interview. Again, we have already talked to him, so we can say, yes, it is a really fun interview with former NHL player and current NHL analyst for NBC, Anson Carter. Great to talk to him. You'll hear that coming up soon. Also, our captain is up for the Norris Trophy. We think he should win. We'll tell you why. Also, Jared Tinordy named Nashville's nominee for the Masterton Trophy. We'll have a bit on Tinner a little bit later as well, and some Twitter questions to get to. But as we have had on just about every single one of these, Thomas Willis, more news from the National Hockey League this week.
Yes, as you mentioned, we begin week 13, I guess, in the next few hours. As you said earlier, March 12th was the date, June 12th as we record. And just yesterday, some more official announcement on Phase 3. We started Phase 2 on Monday, June 8th, for all of the 24 teams who are looking to resume play in the next couple of months. And then the real big piece, even larger than that, was Phase 3. Because as we've discussed in the past, Phase 2 is voluntary workouts. So a lot of the Nashville Predators players, the majority of them even, are not in Music City anymore. They're across the world, and they're able to accomplish a lot of what you can do in Phase 2 on their own.
Well, so exactly. So before we get too much into this, as we said, Phase 2 did begin on Monday of this week, again, allowing teams to have voluntary on- and off-ice small group workouts. And a statement here from the Predators on Phase 2, quote, Nashville Predators players have continued a rigorous training regimen throughout Phase 1 and appreciate the consistency of this routine as we move into Phase 2. Predators players both in Nashville and around the world will continue these routines until we all have a better understanding of the schedule and details for Phase 3 and beyond. We will be consulting with the players and revisiting this plan on a weekly basis to evaluate the best possible training environment for our team, end quote. So again, as you said, a lot of Preds are in town. A lot of them are across the world, though, as well, and they're electing to continue what they've been doing in their respective locales, so no facilities opening up quite yet for the Nashville Predators. And then, as we mentioned, another statement from the NHL, and it was a quick one, but they said, quote, the National Hockey League Players Association and the National Hockey League announced today, that was Thursday, that formal training camps, Phase 3, for the 24 teams resuming play will open on Friday, July 10th, provided that medical and safety conditions allow and the parties have reached an overall agreement on resuming play, the length of training camp, and therefore the start date for formal resumption of play, Phase 4, will be determined at a future date, end quote. Key things there, July 10th, the hopeful date to fire up a full-blown training camp. Another key element, Phase 4 and the resume to play, unlike some leagues who have said, we're coming back on this date the NHL electing to say we're going to continue to evaluate and see if and when we are actually able to resume games.
Yeah, phase three is so much more official, at least in my mind, than the first two phases. Again, the second phase predominantly being like, you know, we think that there's some movement on the horizon, but, you know, nothing that is that formal. And then for the teams that are in their practice facilities, as we've seen several of them, the Oilers, Penguins, Lightning, for example, many of them have either returned to their practice rink or to their actual arena. But again, the rules are very stringent on six or fewer and must be tested and all these sorts of things for phase two. So you are seeing that training camp is going to feel a lot more like an actual training camp in the sense of, we've talked about it before, likely a roster of 28 players and then unlimited goalies. So, I mean, could you see the players do that at Bridgestone Arena or Centennial? But they'll be, you know, in town. Everyone will be there. Coaches will be there. You'll probably want two sheets of ice. You'll have big groups. And again, you'll have all that to really get ready for games. And that's phase four. There's not a fifth phase. Congrats. So we're less, in theory, we're fewer than
phase five. You've won.
Phase five, playing your Stanley Cup parade. But anyway, so phase three beginning is huge, frankly. So I think that's going to potentially, we've talked to several players throughout the course of this now 3-month journey and have heard from Matt Duchene specifically comes to mind saying ideally 2 or probably even 3 weeks would be ideal for a training camp. Now, in the normal scenario, it's about a month long for a season, but you've got preseason games, you've got some other breaks, you've got an even larger group in the first half of a normal training camp because you'll have your like almost whole AHL team with you. So we're not doing that per se. So does that speed up the process? Maybe. So I would think we probably get news on the official two hub cities pretty soon in the next week or so. Again, we still only have the list of 10 for now, but especially once we get close to phase three, which again will be so official for those 24 teams, then it'll really feel like games are close. So if you want to continue out this calendar a little bit more, and again, these dates are not something we've really had in the past, if training camp starts around or on July 10th, that goes for about 3 weeks, you could be looking at games first or second week of August. And then after the qualifying round, it's still the normal Stanley Cup playoffs. So that takes 2 months. So we're probably playing into October or November to finish the season. That then pushes back the 2020-21 season till December, January, something like that. But again, we haven't really had this more of an official timeline before.
As we've said, good to have a roadmap. Yeah. And Sportsnet Hockey Insider in front of the show, Chris Johnston, had some added analysis on the Phase 3 announcement. Some good points from Chris to kind of break down a little bit more of what this means. So as you heard in that statement from the National Hockey League, they have announced today on that Thursday that they have come to this agreement, or rather it's pending on the parties reaching an overall agreement of resuming play. So they would need to vote on that. So Chris says that the Players Association and the league have basically left themselves until the end of June to finalize a return to play agreement to vote on. To this point, the owners and the players have only ratified the 24-team format that will be used. So we said that when the 24-team format was produced, that yes, this is just step one of so many more things that are going to need to be voted on as we go along. So there's some work to do there. We've talked about as well, maybe a team like Vancouver, a team like Calgary, looking at doing training camps in the United States because of the more stringent rules in Canada with a 14-day quarantine. There's talks that would need to happen there with the league if they want to use a Canadian city as a hub city. As you said, the hub cities will have to be played or agreed upon where the games would be played. There's also a lot of collective bargaining issues pertaining to return to play, critical dates, salary cap, that sort of thing. And we know that there's so much to this, but continuing to establish those protocols that govern phases three and four, things like testing, rules governing if there are positive results, living conditions, family visits, that's been a big issue with the players saying they don't want to be separated from families for a month or two at a time. There's still a lot to go here. So there's a lot to consider, things continuing to move in the right direction. But again, important to keep in mind that there are a lot of items to sort through as we roll along here.
And on the Canadian cities, it's entirely possible that by the time you listen to this, there will be some update. It's expected that pretty soon, maybe even the next day or so, that we find out that the Canadian cities may adjust that 14-day quarantine period for the purpose of either the training camp or then even having them be a hub city. So, for example, Vancouver and Edmonton have been pretty forward about wanting to, you know, have the opportunity to be a hub city. I think Calgary can throw them into the mix as well. So we'll see. Again, a reminder that the hub cities are all going to be NHL venues, NHL cities. Mm-hmm. It's just we don't know right now when the 10 will drop to 2. And then also the rules apply. Could be 2 in the West. Could be 2 in the East. Yeah, I would lean toward the West, of course. But, I think the NHL teams in Canada are pushing pretty hard right now to say, like, please don't make us have training camp in the United States. Like, that headache that's going to cause. And then going forward, like, Edmonton's a pretty good setup.
A great setup. And you don't even have to go outside if you're staying in the hotel attached to the rink.
So I think at least having them in the running as well. And the NHL is intentionally waiting to make this decision. Commissioner Gary Bettman said that originally when the 24 return to play format was proposed, what, almost a month ago at this rate. But he said, like, I'm not going to rush out and name this hub city in case something goes wrong or in case, you know, there's data that we don't have. Like, they're waiting on purpose. But I think with training camp starting July 10th, as of now, you probably get a ruling on the hub cities pretty soon. And then from there, it's just going to be wild. So it will be split by conference. You'll have 12 teams in each. You're going to have games just all day long and practices and all being in a quarantined and specialized bubble in the effort to get this done. And I think to the NHL's benefit, there's been, since they were really one of the first to come forward and say, this is our plan, this is what we want to do, there's been a lot of leagues that have joined them now. So the MLS will be starting back next month. Again, actual play, like their real season. You've got the NBA doing the same thing. They're on the tail end. I think July 31st is their date. So that's just only beneficial because so many of these leagues, and especially the NBA and the NHL, those parallels remain. They're so similar in their setup and the venues that they play in, and not necessarily the team size, but again, a lot of those similarities remain. So the more data and the more ability you have to make the right decision, that just only increases your chances to play this season and be able to award the Stanley Cup.
There's a golf tournament going on right now. I stumbled upon some motocross the other night on NBCSN.
Wow.
There's things are happening. Things are coming back, and it's good to see, especially from an NHL perspective. So we'll see in the weeks and months to come, as we always do, how things change. But certainly some more good news from the past week.
Yeah, if I could interject, I guess I would, if I can be simple here. This is probably the best news that we've had, either the best news or the second best news since the 24 plan. Again, putting a date for training camp is significant. I want to make that a big deal because it is.
It's big. Again, so July 10th, keep that in mind. Enjoy the 4th of July coming up in about a month, and then we'll see where things go from there. We do know where we're going next on this program. We will chat with former NHL player and current NHL analyst Anson Carter coming up next. This is the Predators official podcast on ESPN 102.5 The Game. POP, Predators official podcast. Welcome back to the program here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app and wherever you find your favorite podcast. Brooks Bratton, Thomas Willis of NashvillePredators.com, pleased to be back with you. And we are also now pleased to be joined by a man who played 674 games in the NHL regular season, that is, with Boston, Edmonton, Washington, the New York Rangers, Los Angeles, Vancouver, Carolina, and Columbus. He's now an analyst for the NHL on NBC. Pleased to welcome Anson Carter to the program. Anson, welcome to the POP. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. And no, there's a rumor out that I've played for every single National Hockey League team, and that is not true.
There's only what, eight? No, seven. Seven. That's a pretty good swap. Oh, sorry. No, there are eight. There, you know, but we're a little bit closer.
That's what's helped me become a good analyst, because now I know exactly the markets that I'm talking about. I can speak intelligently about them because I've been in most of them.
I was going to say you've been in just about every market, and you've played not for the Predators,
that's
but I'm sure you've been in Nashville a few times.
I haven't had you in Nashville, though.
I love Nashville. The most recent time were there, actually, no, Hockey Day in America were there this past season.
Yeah.
But my favorite time being in Nashville is during the Stanley Cup run when NBC Sports, we have our pre- and post-game show on location during the finals. So I got to give a shout-out to Broadway and Tootsie's, one of my favorite establishments there in Nashville. It was great. I loved it.
You are not alone in alongside your media brothers and your fellow players as well, I'm sure. But Anson, we're hopeful to see games here shortly. And you talk about your work with NBC, and there's some stuff to talk about now. But let's first hit on the NHL's return to play plan for this summer. From a former player's perspective and maybe an analyst too, how do you just view all of this and the potential to be playing games maybe by the month of August here?
I think it's going to be exciting. Just talking to players over the break that we've had during the stoppage and staying at home, guys are frustrated and cooped up. And you know, it's one thing to train in the off season knowing that you have a September start date, but a lot of these guys are training, but they didn't know what they're training for. And that becomes tough mentally. It becomes a grind then because you're not setting your target. And you normally base your training based on those dates. So you'd say, okay, I'm going to let my body recover for this amount of weeks. Then I'm going to slowly get into stretching, and then I'm going to do more cardio and then more anaerobic. And then with your weightlifting and your training, you start off lighter and you go heavier and you go towards more endurance, and you would schedule your training that way so you're coming to camp in peak performance. But during that break, nobody knew what they were training for. So they're trying to maintain their level of fitness levels best they could. And when they announced that we're coming back, I talked to a lot of players, and guys are pumped. They're excited. They can't wait to get back on the ice with their teammates.
The more I watch hockey, and specifically the playoffs, the more I feel like any team can win it once they get into the postseason. So I'm curious, for the Predators specifically, make a case for why you think they could win it all this year, but then also a case against. Maybe what's their Achilles heel? What's the pro? What's the con for their ability to, if they get into that final round of 16 after starting in the qualifying round, if they could go all the way?
Well, I'm a big fan of Pekka Rinne, and if he gets hot and he holds down the fort, they have a chance. Roman Josi, their captain, I love his game. He's blossomed into a tremendous two-way hockey player, and their defense is always in the strength of the Nashville Predators. But the one thing that I see wrong with them is there's not enough consistency that I'm seeing up front. Ryan Johansson has to evolve into an elite center. He's being paid like one. When the games matter the most, I feel like that's when he's most focused. And games, say, I don't know, September to October, he's not really in the zone. And now you're talking about a two-month sprint. That's the big question mark for me. And Kyle Turris, same exact thing. When he first got traded to Nashville from Ottawa, he was unreal. And then he fell off a cliff. And you need to have that strength down the middle. That was really missing, I think, from the Nashville Predators' perspective. If those two players in particular, with Matt Duchene, elevate their game, and the Nashville Predators have a chance. But if they don't, and Ryan Johansson just sleeps through the postseason, they don't have a chance. Like, I'm sorry, they don't. Like, he, for me, is the X factor. With a lot of teams that look for an X factor, he's the X factor. Because I know Philip Forsberg, he's going to show up. He's going to do what he has to do. Victor Arvidsson, I think he's going to show up. He's going to hustle and play with his grit. But the big men down the middle have to show up to make a difference to the Nashville Predators.
Anson, you mentioned the captain, Roman Josi, and we're kind of biased, but we think it's pretty clear that he should win the Norris Trophy as the NHL's best defenseman. But why is Josi one of the best in the world at what he does?
This is ability to play two-way hockey. I wasn't sold initially on Josi's game defensively because he wasn't put in those positions before. Like, you had Ekholm and you had Subban before playing as a shutdown pair against the other team's top offensive players. But with PK being gone, Roman's been forced to play more of a defensive-style game, and it hasn't taken away from his offensive capabilities. Like, he is a fourth forward on the ice. You have to have your head in a swivel every single time as an opposing forward, and you can't allow him to beat you up the ice. And the puck's on his stick. Like, he's okay leading the rush, and he's just as confident joining the rush. And that's what makes him so dangerous. Some players on the back end are great joining the rush and not so smart when they're leading the rush. He's dominant leading the rush. He can make things happen, the puck on the stick, being the first guy in the offensive zone. So I think that's what makes him so special.
Now that we have the plan in place, now that it seems like phase three on target to start July 3rd, of course that means training camp. So then in theory, could mean that we have games the first week of August or something like that. We still don't know the two hub cities. But again, this plan in itself, again, with the asterisk that all things need to go well, but it seems like we're getting there. I'm just curious of your whole expectation of, I don't think you've had anything in your career that you can directly compare to this exact situation. But if you're a player right now, I mean, what What's the thought process of, okay, it's 24 teams this time, then it gets down to 16, and it's going to be such a unique thing. I'm going to be in one city for perhaps all the way up to the Stanley Cup final. Just that, as a whole, how unique is this scenario?
It is unique, and it's different. It's something that we haven't, any of us have experienced. Like, this is the first time any player in the National Hockey League has gone through a pandemic. So everyone's in the same boat, whether you're a player, you're a broadcaster, you're a fan. We're all in the same boat, all of us together, and the unknown is the unknown. But the good thing is if you're a player and you're thinking to yourself, well, if I just get myself focused and ready for 2 months, a two-month sprint, I could be in a position that I could hoist the Stanley Cup over my head and become a Stanley Cup champion. And I don't want to hear the stuff about an asterisk being behind or beside your name. No, everyone's in the same position here. So a Stanley Cup championship is a Stanley Cup championship. I think we all fail to bring up the fact that, and I don't want to bring it up on a National Predators podcast, but the Chicago Blackhawks won their championship during a shortened season.
Mm-hmm.
And no one says anything about that. We always talk about the three cups that Dynasty won with Kane and Taves and Crawford and Duncan Keith. No one mentions the shortened season. So if the Preds or any other team go out and win a Stanley Cup this year, you're not going to have an asterisk beside their name. You're going to say they're the Stanley Cup champ.
We appreciate your consideration there. You know your audience. We're talking to former NHL player and current NHL on NBC analyst Anson Carter. Anson, let's switch gears a little bit. We all know what's been going on in this country, on this continent, in the world the last few weeks with the death of George Floyd. First, just give us your perspective on what you've been seeing, not only from a hockey standpoint, but all over the world as well as we work our way through this time.
We're having a real awakening right now, and it's a beautiful time to be alive. I'm a dual citizen, born in Canada, American citizen as well. I lived here in the U.S. a lot longer than I lived in Canada. I went to school here in the U.S. So it's been amazing for me because, and I bring that up because a lot of my Canadian friends would say, wow, like, I can't believe you picked living in the U.S. with all this turmoil. Like, don't you want to come back here to Canada? Well, the U.S. is my home. And I've seen all this happening over the course of my 46 years on this planet. And what happened to George Floyd is something that everyone in the black community knew existed. We all talked about it. We knew, but there wasn't any video proof. And I think that's what people are most upset and sickened and angry about, is the fact there is video proof of it. And it's similar to Ray Rice, where we hear about these instances of domestic violence, but you didn't see it. You couldn't put a picture to it, a face to it. And when you saw that officer kneeling on George Floyd for almost 9 minutes there, and he knew he was being recorded, and he didn't do anything about it. He had that smug look on his face like, yeah, you're recording me, but I'm going to get away with this. That was the look he was giving. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I've got kids, and if I catch them with their hands in the cookie jar, they're out of there so fast, they know that I'm catching them. But this guy knew he was being recorded, and he did nothing about it. I think that was what the outrage was all about.
Absolutely. And then this week, you, on the heels of that, were in a video called In Union, There Is Strength, and one of our own, Philip Forsberg, was in that as well. Just what led to that piece of content, and why did you feel like it was important to speak out in that way?
Well, I think in the past, you look at history, a lot of times when countries are going to battle, they try to divide and conquer. I believe that was one of the Nazis' main motives to trying to take down the West, was divide and conquer, and America always believed in union their strength. And I thought it was a similar thing with the National Hockey League and the hockey community in general, that I wanted to put out a message, not just from myself, but from the group, that was a blanket statement to let everyone know that we don't stand behind this. Like, I had a quote at the very end of it that says, just because we're social distancing doesn't mean we're socially distant. And that really sums it up. Like, there's no hockey being played right now. This COVID-19, people are cooped up, they're frustrated, and now you've seen this pent-up energy getting released. And I wanted to make a statement with a group of hockey players, and Philip Forsberg, I asked him to participate, and there was no hesitation, no, Anthony, who else is involved? Is the league involved? Where is it going to be played? He was in right away. And those are the kind of leaders that I wanted to have in this video, and I put everyone's names in there because I want, in case you didn't know the faces, I wanted you to be able to see who these people were, and you could look them up if you wanted to. They're Isabel, Cup champs, Stanley Cup champs, Hall of Famers, NCAA champs. You name it. You go down the list. Olympic gold medalists, female players, male players, team doctors, agents, commissioner, executive director of the hockey players union. I even have my kids in there. And I wouldn't ask my kids to do something that I wouldn't have the players do, and vice versa. And I always thought that it's important to teach kids when they're young, so why not have my kids in there? Because I never really exposed my kids to social media at all. But if I'm asking the players to do something, then I should feel comfortable enough to have my kids do exactly the same thing, and that's what I did.
Anson, let's end on this. And you've talked about your optimism for the future in the game of hockey because of how much people are listening to one another right now. Why is the game of hockey in a better place now than maybe a decade or two ago when you were playing? And what would you still like to see happen as we progress here?
Well, you're right. We are listening, which is great. You're seeing these young kids being drafted in the first round. You're seeing black writers like Bill Douglas, a senior writer from that, NHL.com. That was never the case before. A female, you're seeing as Kim Davis, the highest ranking black female executive in the National Hockey League, who's doing a lot of tremendous things. Gary Bettman and Bill Daly are open to these changes, open to conversations, which is great. They understand that maybe things didn't happen the way they should have been happening 10, 15, 20 years ago, but we're looking ahead now. And that's my only concern. I've always spoken out about things that happened in the past, but I don't want to live in the past. I want to keep those as a baseline so that we have those, we could bank those. Now, in 5 years, we could look back and say, okay, here's where we've gone. We knew how bad it was then because this is the data, this is the metric, this was being said before, but now we're moving forward and we're applying our critical thinking to improving the game, and this is how we could show how we've improved the game. Like, that's what I'm all about, and it starts at the grassroots level. Zero tolerance at USA Hockey, zero tolerance at Hockey Canada. And when you teach the kids that it's unacceptable, then as they become adults, they'll start being able to do exactly the same thing and pass the message down to their kids going forward.
Anson, we thank you for your time, for your insight, and for your unique perspective on these topics. And we've got to find a way to get you back into Nashville soon. I know it's not for the completion of this season, but hopefully next season, maybe things are a bit more normal. We can get you back on Broadway soon enough.
You don't have to ask me twice. Send an invite and I'm there. Short commute from Atlanta.
Well, that's easy enough. Well, Anson, thanks for the time. We appreciate it.
No problem, guys. Anytime.
Up next, we outline why Roman Josi should win the Norris Trophy and discuss Jared Tenorti's nomination for the Masterton. This is the Preds Official Podcast on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Predators Official Podcast. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Brooks Bratton and Thomas Willis. We're back.
What does it say about our show that you're now playing songs on it that you don't even really like that much?
Well,
episode 90, was that our limit?
Episode 90. Well, no. So it's a good intro. And if you've listened to this show for the last few months, you know that I discovered a band called The Midnight within the last 4 to 5 months, I guess, and love their stuff.
What is that's, time?
That's it, you know, for real. That's a new song by them, Dance With Somebody, which is fine. It's just not going to be one of my favorites. But I liked,
it's fine.
I liked the intro for this scenario. Sure. New album July 10th for them, and you just told me for the Need to Breathe fans.
Yes, August 28th, Out of Body, their new album. They had a single release on Thursday with Drew and Ellie Holcomb from
Drew Holcomb and the Neighbors?
Drew Holcomb and the Neighbors, thank
sure.
you.
There you go.
So it's good. But really excited about that album. It's crazy. Like, and they've said this in some of their like videos that they've put out. You know, they wrote it 2-3 months ago, and then it comes out during this period in our lives, and they're like, "Wow, those lyrics have unintended consequences." Yeah. You know, so it's pretty cool.
Or you could just be like friend of the show Ben Rector, who just writes a song about quarantine.
Yeah.
Just straight
also
up.
A great song. We've already played that on the
and
show.
And it's a jam, which he's about to have twins soon. Congratulations!
I know. Congrats,
to him.
Future friend of show Ben.
Again, we feel like we're friends with him, so we're like, Ben's having twins.
You guys let us know how we can actually become his friend. We'll be happy to fulfill that. So appropriate episode 90. Roman Josi wears 90 in international competition.
Because he was born in 1990, just like
born
you.
Born in 1990.
Because you're old.
Yeah. So I thought we'd all agree to not turn 30 this year, and then Roman Yossi turned 30 about a week ago. So thanks for nothing, Captain.
It's coming.
Anyway, this is really cool. A lot of this work put out by Nick Barnowski of the Preds PR department.
The Barn Dog.
And then you just stole his stats and wrote an article on it. No. But if you are a top-level stats, if you're an advanced analytics guy, again, yes, we are biased. And yes, John Carlson absolutely should be a finalist. And he very well could win this award. I mean, he's deserving. I'm not saying he's my first choice, but certainly deserves to win it. It's not as if it's going to be like, oh, man, Carlson won the Norris. So we just think Roman Yossi probably has a better case, and we've got some facts. This is actually very interesting to hear. So listen to some of this, and we'll go back and forth on why we think. Again, so no national writers ever won the Norris, so why we think Yossi could be the first.
Yeah, so Roman is up for the Norris Trophy, awarded annually to the league's best defenseman. Now the Professional Hockey Writers Association votes on this award, and the balloting process has begun. So this isn't like you can log on somewhere and cast your vote, because you know we'd be pumping that if we could.
Yeah.
We'd be doing it night and day, but... as you said, I mean, we're biased, but I think it's pretty clear why he should be the front runner. So if you want to look at just straight up stats, he dressed for every Preds game this season, 16 goals, 49 assists, and 65 points, all career highs. His totals for points and assists set franchise records in a single season, again, in a season that was shortened. So he now has those records.
Yeah, and I'll give you one here. So, again, 65 points in 69 games. So virtually a point per game. There's only been one player in Predators history to average more than a point per game for an 82-game season. That's Paul Kariya. And so I looked at these numbers as well and found out that, so again, if you want to like look at, okay, at least a sample size of 50 games, but maybe a guy got hurt or didn't, you know, what was kind of down the stretch, like a couple years ago, for example, when Victor Arvidsson was scoring like a goal a game when he came back for the last 50 games or so. But anyway, Roman Yossi in Predators history is the only player in that top five to be a defenseman and basically average a point per game. So his is, you know, it's like 0.9-ish, 0.94, I think, off the top of my head. So, again, Steve Sullivan's in there. Paul Kariya's in there, as I just mentioned. But Roman Yossi as a defenseman to basically average a point per game is unheard of for any season.
I think this is pretty telling from just the baseline stats. He was the only defenseman in the NHL to record at least 15 goals, 45 assists, 60 points, a plus 20 rating, and 25 minutes of average ice time over the past season.
Yeah.
He does a lot on the offensive side of things, but he's also pretty darn good on the defensive side of things. And you heard Anson Carter mention it. Now that Roman is the guy on the Nashville blue line, he's had to do everything, and he's shown that he's more than capable of that, starting the rush from his own end and making something happen in the offensive zone is one of his specialties. And in listening to Scott Hartnell, I have a story on him on Preds.com at the moment as well, but he was talking about how Roman Yossi, he's, again, maybe a little bit biased having played with him, but he's like, am I allowed to throw out the Bobby Orr comparison, who is regarded as the greatest defenseman of all time? At least as a guy who played in the NHL in the 60s and that decade or that time span. But he said, Scott Hartnell said he was watching a Bobby Orr documentary the other night on NHL Network, and he was watching him. He's like, gosh, that looks like Roman Yossi.
I know.
Just the way that he dominates when he's on the ice.
I think there was a change in about 2005 when the rules shifted for before that season, that such an emphasis was put on skating and that ability, and then Roman Yossi is just better out of many NHLers, that he can skate even better than they can. If you want some additional historical significance on the top line stats, Roman Yossi had a 12-game point streak earlier this season. The first time a defenseman's done that since Shane Gostisbehere in 2015-2016 season. So 4 or 5 years since that happened. He then had goals in 7 consecutive games. First time a defenseman's done that since Mike Green in 2009. So more than a decade for that. That's pretty impressive. So again, the 65 points in 69 games, that puts him in the conversation, because you'll hear some people say, like, it is tough to measure defense in some ways. Those are the stats we're about to get to. So a lot of times the award can come down to, okay, well, you are a defenseman and you put up X number of points, and that was impressive. Mm-hmm. And you'll hear people be like, well, why can't a guy who's just good at defense win? And I think that's part of it. But in today's NHL, if you're going to really control your team, be the MVP of it, dominate a game like Roman Yossi is, and you're a defenseman, then you're going to be putting up points as well. And so to that end, this is pretty interesting, and I think we can skip around here a bit, but For starters, Romeo Yossi scored roughly 12% of the whole team's points by himself, which is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one advanced analytic I wanted to look at. This is from a website called The Point Hockey. So what's a huge point of defense, right? Getting the puck out of your zone. If you're getting the puck out of your zone, then you effectively can't be scored on.
You're defending. You're defending. You're advancing the puck.
You're advancing the puck, and then hopefully in transition you're converting on offense again. And we know, if you've had the privilege of watching Roman Yossi, how much he's able to just skate it himself. I was going to tweet the other day, I wish I could go through life like Roman Yossi goes through Ottawa Senators. I mean, every time he plays them, you're like, well, there goes three of them, and he scored another ridiculous goal against them. But anyway, so Roman Yossi was number one in all NHL blue liners in the following stats. So zone exits, like we just talked about, so he had roughly 8.5 of those per game. Though then entries into the offensive zone, 5.5, and then offensive zone puck possession time. Again, a defenseman in the offensive zone, almost a minute per game he had the puck on his stick. So again, exiting the zone, getting into the offensive zone, what could be more important than that? And again, no harsh critic to the rest of the Predators team, but oh my goodness, he was so much better than the rest of the team at different points. Mm-hmm. And I think that may be one of his biggest caveats that he has against John Carlson is he doesn't have Alexander Ovechkin and TJ Oshie and Nicholas Backstrom and this Stanley Cup champion team from just 2 years ago. He's doing it kind of all by himself, and he's looked really impressive doing it as well.
Yes, the Predators needed him way more than I think any team needed their potential Norris Trophy candidate. And if you want to go back to some of the more notable stats, Yossi was second among all NHL defensemen in points and assists. He was tied for second in goals. He was third in average ice time, and he finished first in shots with 260. No other defenseman was consistently ranked as highly in all of those categories than Yossi was. Yes, he's behind John Carlson in a few of those offensive categories, but Carlson drops off in others. Nobody else is consistently as high as Yossi is in so many different categories across the board.
Yep.
As far as an NHL defenseman is concerned. And again, as you said, I think his importance to this Predators team is, I don't want to say it's underrated, but I think you've just got to take that into so much more consideration than maybe you would have. I mean, without Yossi, where are the Predators right now? Are they even...
Right.
They're
right.
Probably still in the 24-team playoff.
Maybe.
But the way that he has played has certainly allowed them to be the sixth seed against the 11-seeded Coyotes.
And I would counter with this as well. Give me an example of somebody just skating by Roman Yossi or somebody undressing Roman Yossi and scoring a goal, right? Like, he's not the lay a big open ice hit kind of guy or the hip check kind of guy like we still get from Dan Hamhuis every now and then.
Roman Yossi's blown past Erik Karlsson,
yeah,
the former.
No,
I mean, that was the knock on Karlsson all the time. Yeah. Erik Karlsson, not John Carlson.
Right.
That he's great on offense,
yeah,
but... You have
but
a guy
else?
Like Roman Yossi that can
right.
walk around him.
One of the things that I think Yossi does the best night in and night out is when the opposition's in the offensive zone about, you know, to get a shot on goal, he just, oh, so subtly reaches out his stick and deflects the puck into the netting. Just deflects the puck over the net, deflects the puck into the corner. And again, there's an effort to try and track some of that better analytically, but you really need to watch him on a nightly basis to be able to see just, oop, that chance was turned away. Oh, there went that one too. Oh, look, and now he's, you know, going the other end and trying to score as well. So in our last couple of minutes, we had one more official nominee. So, again, the expectation is Roman Yossi will certainly be in one of the three finalists for the Norris Trophy, and we'll see if he's able to win soon. But all 31 teams get a nominee for the Masterton Trophy. For those who don't know what that is, A, quickly on that, and then B, really, really cool and powerful quote from him on why he thinks that is Jared Tenorti, why he helped turn his career around and earn this nomination.
Yeah, so it's the Nashville chapter of the PHWA, the Professional Hockey Writers Association, that picks a nominee in each of their respective markets. And the Masterton is awarded annually to the NHL player who best exemplifies the qualities of perseverance, sportsmanship, and dedication to hockey. Jared Tenorti exemplifies that dedication to hockey. He was drafted in the first round of the NHL by Montreal all the way back in 2010. A decade later, he hit career highs this season with the Predators in games played with 28. He scored his first NHL goal, 4 assists, 5 points, 71 hits. a number of memorable moments along the way from Tenorti, like sticking up for Victor Arvidsson in a scrap against Robert Bortuzzo in St. Louis back in February. He scored his first career goal in Washington, the city where his father Mark played for the Capitals in the 90s, and Mark and the rest of the family were in attendance for that, so a really cool moment. But Tenorti mentioned this. I spoke to him earlier in the week on getting the nomination, and you know, just talking about where has he come in the last 10 years, and how does he view the game differently now? How does he approach it? How has his life changed? And I said, who's made a big impact on you? Is it a coach? Is it a trainer? Is it a family member? And Thomas, I think you can probably relate to this now, but Tenorti said that my mindset changed when we had a daughter. And that, he said, I've been with my wife a long time. She's been with all of this through me. But once my daughter was born 2 years ago, it sets you back a little bit and you look at the bigger picture. He's like, I now have this young girl I've got to provide for, and she's really what matters to me. And so you kind of step back and get a different perspective on it. And I know you've been able to experience that as of late, and it kind of makes you look at things differently.
Yeah, let me conclude on this. I'm curious if I'm reading the context into it right. So in that story, it almost seemed as if he was implying, because I have a daughter, I want some more security for my family, that he almost was saying, I'm willing to sign this deal with the Milwaukee Admirals and kind of lock in, settle in, and have that security, and yes, rather than just keep going crazy, chasing a dream, taking long shots, and kind of not playing the way that he should have. But once he got his mindset in the right way, that's when he actually earned his way back to the NHL.
He got some security exactly with the Nashville organization, with Milwaukee. He was their captain there, of course, before he was recalled 2 days after Christmas. But also he said, you know, sometimes as a hockey player, you can get too caught up in everything, and it's hockey, hockey, hockey all the time.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily healthy. It's
right,
good to have other interests.
And could this opportunity be better? Do I need to jump over here? Do I need to do this? And it was finally the clarity of, like, I just need to stay here and be content with what I have and do well in that. And that's what earned him back to the NHL. I thought that was really cool. You don't always get to hear that perspective. We've heard it a few times from Rocco Grimaldi, I think, in the last couple seasons, but similar for Jared Tenorti as well. So congrats to him.
Indeed. Again, and he's, you know, one more thing I'll just say is that he's, you know, sometimes guys like that get a knock on their play. He's never going to be Roman Josi.
Right.
But he's a guy like that is a really easy guy to cheer for. When you get to know him as a person and you see what he's been through and how hard he works, to see a guy like that find some success, especially for a young family, and his team just loves him for his ability to stick up for them and kind of have some rallying points in the locker room, moments like that. So happy for Jared to get some recognition there. It was great to talk to him, and just one of many who are excited to get back here soon.
And 6'6", he's an inch taller than me, so nice to have a eye-level conversation whenever we talk to each other. So the BOP will continue in just a moment. We'll conclude by answering some of your Twitter questions and some topics from the week. That's next here on the Preds Official Podcast on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Am I beautiful? BOP Preds Official Podcast, ESPN 102.5 The Game, and streaming right now on the Game Nashville app. For more about the show, to listen to past episodes, to subscribe, to give us a 5-star rating, which of course you want to do, go to NashvillePredators.com/podcast. For Brooks and Maximus, I am Thomas. Welcome back to segment 4 of the show.
Are you going to answer that question asked by the gentleman with Kygo there?
Well, I've never seen him, so he seems to have a beautiful singing voice, so I'll say yes.
I saw him the other day, because that was my song of the day the other day, so I looked him up just to tag him.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a good-looking DJ. I'll admit it.
Oh, Kygo. I was...
Well, no, the other guy was...
The other guys too.
They're both great. They're fine.
Great.
They're good. They're not ugly.
So quickly... Yeah, good. Quickly touch on the Golden Classics, which will be expanding over the next, I guess, about a month. Now that we've concluded the run to the 2017 Stanley Cup Final, showing all of those 14 victories, we're now opening the vault up and going back into it a little bit deeper for some classics from 2010, 2012, some other classic playoff victories.
Some of them you and I were here for. Some of them is Thomas in his dorm room watching.
Yes. Some of those is just even younger Thomas. Yeah. So good times. We've got, I guess, beating the Red Wings in the playoffs for the first time.
2012.
We've got the first ever road playoff win. That's Thomas in his dorm room. That's 2010 in Chicago. We've got Mike Fisher, triple overtime, of course. I don't know how that's going to be condensed to 2 hours, but We'll find out. Maybe just eliminate the second overtime.
We will figure it out. Yeah. Well, and when was it the win against Anaheim in the playoffs for 2011, right?
Yes. Oh,
that
yeah,
was 2011.
So, yeah, showing game five of that, which is the tying goal by Shea Weber in the final minute, and then winning in overtime for Jarrett Smith. So that's game five, and then game six,
Easter Sunday.
The wife and I were there. I think we were engaged at the time, 2011. First ever playoff series victory, game six.
You were there?
Yeah, I was there.
That's cool. Did you cry?
I'm still crying. All right, we only have a few minutes to get to a slew of Twitter questions. Jonathan asked early, I'm not sure exactly, like Tuesday, I think, or something like that.
We do say to use the hashtag anytime.
And we found it. He said, how might this year change the future of sports broadcasting? Meaning, and this is our expectation, do Willie and Donick, Chris Mason, Lindsey Riley,
Willie and Donick,
are they in the Nashville market looking at a master feed, calling the game off of that? That's kind of the expectation at this point. So does it change it? Now, I'll give you this. Was it 2 years ago, I believe Toronto announced that they were going to have some of their announcers cease to travel and do that very thing. And there was an outcry at the time. People were like, how dare you suggest that announcers can call a game and not be there?
Yeah.
But now that it's going to be the norm, does that maybe continue?
Well, and it's been done too with World Juniors, I know, on NHL Network occasionally. I don't know if they've done it recently, but sometimes if the World Juniors are in Slovakia or something, it's pretty easy to sit at home on a monitor and call it. It's not a huge difference. I'll be curious
because I think I've said this in a past episode, but it looks like if baseball gets their act together and returns, plays a 70-75 game season, it looks like all those announcers will be at home too. So once you call about 100 games, including the playoffs, at home, like would you be more likely to do 5 or 10 next season?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's entirely possible.
I don't know. I like having those guys on the road.
No, I do too. I'm not arguing for that.
No,
I'm just
sure.
saying, like, yeah, I mean, things are changing, right? Like, how many Zoom calls had you done in your life until the last 3 months?
Oh,
like, one, two, or three. Like, I always loved it. It's like, BlueJean, download that app. Google Hangouts, download that. And now it's like, I do like 4 Zooms a day. So
I'm ready to see some things in person, I think.
Yeah, well, that's true too. But I think the world has changed a little bit, and I bet it never goes all the way back. He also asked, do the Predators having a new coach, doesn't that maybe give them an advantage because they haven't been scouted as much? I think it goes either way. I mean, the fact that John Hines personally has not faced the Arizona Coyotes with the Nashville Predators, that's a wild card for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Good and bad.
Well, and you've had plenty of time to prepare. There's no one's going to have any sort of advantage on being on the second half of a back-to-back and not having maybe as much time to look at some video. They will, I think these two teams will be very familiar with each other, at least inside and out on video, before they face one another. Max said he just wanted a whole episode of stats, analytics, and personality traits why Roman Josi should win the Norris. Well, I did want to say as well that this has nothing
First
to do
off,
with
you're
that.
Welcome, Max.
You're welcome, Max. Not our Max, another Max. I will say that this has nothing to do with the award itself, but I mean, Roman is one of the nicest guys. I mean, we always say that Pekka is probably gets the award for nicest hockey player ever, but Roman is right up there. He's got great hair. We all know that.
And he's getting better at NHL 20. He's now being able to beat his counterparts across the NHL and NHL 20. Yeah. So again, he was nice enough to help us stream some of those games on Twitch during the quarantine. So that was cool, too.
And he let me interview him about 59 times during All-Star Weekend in St. Louis and didn't complain once. So that alone should get him some sort of ribbon or medal or something.
Andrew wants to know, do we watch any other hockey leagues? Not really. International competition, for sure. Like, I would say I am a lover of the Olympics. It still kills me that the NHL is not in the Olympics right now. I would love to see them get back in it. For sure, when the Preds are in the World Championships, when there's other international games. But I truly don't really know of a lot of ways to, like, watch the Swedish Hockey League, for example.
Yeah. Well, so I will say during the big lockout in 2004-05, I was in eighth grade. And I kind of look at that as a blessing in disguise personally, just because I was able to then pay attention to the AHL, the ECHL, Canadian Juniors, U.S. Juniors. I mean, I went to games in the OHL, the ECHL, and the Central Hockey League, I think, during that lockout year, and just got so much more of a broader understanding of different teams and different leagues. And so I did enjoy that time. It was tough as a kid growing up to not have the NHL for a year, but it was really cool to get that experience and go to Wheeling and Johnstown and Erie and Youngstown, all a bunch of different minor league cities surrounding Pittsburgh.
And I think truly, it's honestly something I use as a barometer sometimes to be like, do I still like hockey? Is it still too much? I mean, we're watching the Preds play every other day at basically a minimum, and yet I still want to come home and use my NHL TV subscription and watch one, maybe two other games, or at least have them on in the background. Sometimes I'll be like, do I still want to do this? Do I still want to watch this? Yes, I do, actually. Yeah. So, you know, the NHL is so, it's almost always on, it feels like. So I just kind of gravitate toward that.
I have the same thought when I come home during the season. It's a Wednesday night. I don't have anything to do. Oh, Wednesday night hockey's on.
Yeah, I know. And then in the playoffs, I think you and I are just as fired up as any fan. Oh, that first round is the best when you just like, but I've talked about this before.
It's on for like 7 straight hours.
And like you'll play a game and like you'll win maybe. So you'll be up in the series 1-0. You'll be like, can we just like live this for like 5 days until we play game 2 so that I can just watch other matchups and like know in the back of my mind that we're up in the series. Yeah, so we are absolute suckers for that as well. For Brooks Bratton, follow him on Instagram at Brooks Bratton. He's the very same handle on Twitter. Max, what's your handle? At Max Hurst Radio, something like that? He's speaking. Here we go.
I don't think I'm the same handle. I think there's a dot on Instagram. I think it's Brooks.Bratton.
Well, gosh, we've been misleading people all these years.
But
you might want to check that out.
You'll find me.
Max, you get to say your handle.
It took me 20 seconds to turn my own mic on. That's how good of a producer I am. At Max Hurst Talks.
At
but
Max
I don't
Hurst
tweet
talks
very
on
much
Twitter.
About the Preds.
Okay.
Well, he's a Vandy guy.
Then don't follow him. Just use hashtag Preds Podcast. No, I'm just kidding. thanks for listening to this edition of the show. For more about it, go to NashvillePreds.com/podcast. Thanks to Anson Carter for joining us on the POP this week. He said we have to say go green. I can hear him saying go white somewhere off in the distance. Again, that was his requirement. And we're on all your major podcast delivery services. So wherever you get your podcast, wherever you like to listen to them, we're there for you. That even includes Spotify. For that full list, as I said, NashvillePreds.com/podcasts. That'll do it for this week. Hey, check out the Premier League. It's coming up very soon before we even speak to you next. Soccer's back. Sports are back.
PGA golf.
PGA back. We think hockey is right behind it.
Oh, so close.